Hi, my name is Ophélie, and you're listening to the Mama Activist Podcast, a podcast where we explore topics ranging from social justice, culture, politics, and news through deep conversation with myself, activists, humanitarians, and everyday people trying to make a difference. It's a space where we are willing to learn, grow, and be challenged collectively while highlighting activists doing amazing things in the world. From hearing new perspectives to learning new things, we are pushing for a better world, fighting for our liberation and reclaiming our power. So tune in and be a part of the movement. Hi guys, good morning, if it's the morning where you are. I hope you slept well. I like to say grand rising in the morning. So grand rising, I hope that you are all well this morning, that you slept well, and that wherever you are in the world, you are setting your intention right for this day. Me today, I intend to have a good day. So welcome back to another episode of the Mama Activist Podcast. This episode is very special to me and very unique because I am recording it from my flat. With Afra, who is playing around me, and is actually perfect for today's topic because for today, I want to talk about motherhood activism, single motherhood activism, and what it's like to raise a daughter on my own while traveling the world and being an activist. So, yeah, it's a very, very, what's the word I'm looking for? Very personal topic, obviously, because it has to do with my personal life and the lifestyles that we have together with Afra. But yes, Afra was born on the 29th of August 2021. So this year she is actually going to be 2 years. Hey, Afra. Afra was in plans. It was in a planned pregnancy, but I do thank God every day for her and for being a mother and for everything that motherhood has brought into my life. Motherhood has been such a life-changing experience, and it has brought me so much more than I thought. I think the first time when I got pregnant on Lesbos Island. So talking about my activism, I was the peak of my activism. I was on Lesbos Island. It was just after the largest refugee camp burned down. And obviously that was a traumatic experience for many of us, including all the asylum seekers who got stuck in the streets, but also for all the activists who were out there trying to support people stuck in the streets. So after I got pregnant straight after, I guess I was looking for some kind of like comfort, some reassurance. And in response, God just gave me a daughter. And I think it's beautiful because every time I think about Lesbos and what happened there, even though it was a traumatic experience and it was very hard, well, I got one of the most beautiful presents from the universe, or God, if you call it God. So, yes, I discovered I was pregnant on my way back to, when I came back to London after this. I had been in Greece for almost a year, and after the camp burned down, and then, you know, we had to support so many people. There were 16,000 people stuck in the streets of Lesbos. The police was trapping them. And for 5 days, we literally had to, you know, to fight with police, to deal with so much violence, to witness so much so much violence for asylum seekers. I saw my black community, you know, suffering to an extent that I never thought I would witness something like this in Europe. but I did, and it really broke my heart. And so after this, I decided for my mental health to take a break. Otherwise, I think I was going to have a breakdown. And, you know, in activism, it's important to do radical self-care, because, you know, ideally we want to do our activism for as long as possible, because, you know, advocating for a cause, campaigning for change, it has to be for a long run. It cannot be for like a short time. So I think this is why, for me, self-care, I like to call it radical self-care, is important when doing activism. So this is why I decided to go back to London. I was living with my sisters there. My sister meaning my close friends. We are like a close community. So I came back home December 2020, and I knew something wasn't right. I was in denial for a few days, but I could sense that something wasn't right. And then, yeah, I found out I was pregnant with one of my sister, and at first I was shocked. And again, this is a very personal, this is really me sharing about my experience, this is a very personal episode. But yeah, I was shocked. I just honestly didn't know what to do. I was a bit lost, and I couldn't turn to my family. I'm glad that I had my sisters around me. And it took me a while to come to that decision, but I decided to do it. I was like, you know what, I believe in God. I am not a Christian and I am not a Muslim. I don't associate myself with a particular religion, but I have a personal relationship with God or the universe. And I think that it's just meant to be, so I did it. And being pregnant, I wanted to have a break, you know, having come back from Lesbos to London to rest and to recharge and to heal. I was even more forced to stay still and be present within myself and within my body. So I stayed in London from beginning of December to April, so that's December, January, February, March, April, 5 months. I had a 5 months break, and after this, so I was in my second semester, but I actually decided to go back to Lesbos. I was 5 months pregnant, even though I was trying to hide it so that people wouldn't be worried about me. I was very pregnant, and I went to Lesbos, and It just gave me even more fuel to do the work I was doing back then, which was, you know, supporting Black asylum seekers and Black refugees in Greece, people who are trapped in situation that sometimes might feel hopeless for them, where they get no support from government or from family. Some of them are really neglected, and I think you can hear Afra playing in the background. But yeah, and especially for Black single mother or for Black pregnant woman, the reality is there was so horrible. But before I got pregnant and I went back to Lesbos being pregnant, even though I was still supporting Black asylum single mothers and pregnant women, I never really understood the necessity. I never really fully saw their condition for what it is, you know. For me, I included them in my community, so obviously I was supporting them, but I didn't realize the importance of supporting them. The importance, but also the, like, it had to be a priority, you know. It wasn't until I was pregnant, I went back there, that I realized that they were the most vulnerable group amongst Black asylum, within the Black asylum community. And yeah, from then on, I went on a journey of supporting Black pregnant women and single mothers. And the stories I gathered, the thing I saw, It was horrible. I remember connecting with a woman who gave birth inside the comb. Yes, Afra? Yes? Do you want milk? Yes, I am still breastfeeding my baby. Just one second. I did say that I was recording this episode with my girl. Come, Afra. Come. So yeah, I remember connecting with this single mother whose name is Gladys, who gave birth in the camp, and she was telling me about the way she gave birth and how when she started going into labor, she was in the camp. She felt pain. She wasn't feeling right. So she went to the police, the authorities within the camp, to alert them of her situation. But obviously they weren't seeing this as an emergency. They actually told her to wait. So she had to wait while having pain. So the mothers of her community came to her, tried to support her as much as possible. They told her actually it's even better for her to wait until the end. Do you want to say something, Afra? They told her it was actually better to wait until the very end, because otherwise they would have pushed for her to have a C-section at the hospital. And straight after she had given birth at the hospital, they sent her back into the camp. You know, those are the stories that I was hearing from single mothers. Another woman actually told me that when she was into labor, she went to the hospital. They actually sent her back outside because they wanted to prioritize other women. I think she mentioned that she was with women of other nationalities, women from Afghanistan, from Iran, and they wanted to see those women first. So as she was going into labor, and she says that she actually felt the baby coming, she was asked to leave the hospital. You see, as a pregnant woman, hearing those stories, I was beyond shocked. I was, you know, it wasn't something that I could just stand there and listen to. I had to do more. And it was Afra who gave me the fuel to then do more for black mothers. And especially single mothers. Afra, you want to say something?
No?
But yes, I could tell you so many different stories, of pregnant women who gave birth while living in the camp, who were sent back inside the camp. There was also this woman that I had met just before the camp burned down. And when the camp burned down, her baby was 1 week old. And she was in the streets, you know. She was among the people who were trapped in the street with her 1 month baby. She didn't have 1 week baby, sorry. She didn't even have means of communicating with me at the time. I remember one of my friend and I, we were so worried about her. We went inside the street and we looked for her everywhere. We had food, we had milk, formula milk, just in case, because many women there, unfortunately, because of health issue, because of sanitary condition of the camp, were unable to breastfeed. So we looked for this woman everywhere with her baby, with some clothes to give her, with some nappies, because she didn't have anything. When we finally found her, she was sitting on the ground in front of the camp that had just burned down. She was among the few people remaining in front of that camp. Other people, most people had left and gone to the street of Lesbos. She was there sitting down. She was trying to feed her baby, who was like, he was wrapped in some towel. I remember he didn't really have clothes. She didn't have nappies. I think she had like one or two that someone, like some other people, gave to her, but that was it, you know. And I remember that when I saw her that day, in my heart, for me, something broke. something broke. I remember feeling outraged at the violence that, you know, black women, single mothers, black pregnant women had to go through. I didn't even had any tears to cry. To be honest, the whole experience was traumatizing for me. It was all traumatizing for me. But I, like being pregnant myself, 5 months pregnant at the time and seeing this, I just had to do something for my sisters. I just had to do something. So at the time, I was still running this platform, the Unheard Refugee Voices, which I'm going to do a separate episode on this. But yeah, I decided to focus more and to prioritize single mothers and pregnant women more. So I made sure that most of the single mothers and pregnant women that I met, I would support them with what was needed. If it was money, if it was clothes, if it was nappies, if it was, you know, connecting them with like social worker, supporting them with translation at the hospital, I just made sure that, you know, I would prioritize them. And yeah, what I'm trying to say is really like being pregnant, it didn't stop me. Like my body was also feeling tired. You know, I was walking inside the camp before the camp, in the new camp. I was walking inside the camp. And just for context, sorry, this woman I was talking to, actually, no, I wasn't pregnant when I met her. It was before I got pregnant. I remember this, before I got pregnant. But then after I got pregnant, when I was there, I saw her again. Sorry, I got confused as well. And then I met other women who told me about the ways that they gave birth. But this woman, actually, it was before I was pregnant. But I remember it stayed with me because it really shocked me. And I remember having this doubt then, back then, that I should prioritize pregnant women and single mothers. But it wasn't until I got pregnant with Afra and I went back to the camp and I saw those women again that I realized that I hadn't been doing it. And this is when I really started to do it. I stayed in Lesbos about 1 month, and then after I was 6 months pregnant, I came back because my body was tired. But coming back to the UK did not mean that I stopped working. It just meant that I had to be more organized. I had to organize myself more. I had to organize the Unheard Refugee Voices more so that these women will get the support that they deserve. And then, so I was working all through my pregnancy, trying to advocate, trying to organize, to do some kind of mutual aid, to raise awareness. And then, yeah, I stopped working when I was maybe 2-3 weeks before giving birth. And then bear in mind that Afra, she was about one month late. She was due on the 6th of August, but she came on the 29th of August. So I was fully pregnant. I was really pregnant. And during my pregnancy, I didn't have a partner. Afra's father is not around, unfortunately. He is in a mental situation and in a situation that never really allowed him to be here for me. And I didn't want to be in a relationship with him anyway. So I had to go through my pregnancy on my own. I did have the support of my family. I did have the support of my community. But it's true that I also found myself having to advocate for myself and to do things on my own quite a lot. I don't want to say that some moments of my pregnancy felt quite isolating, but I guess it did a little bit because it was also scary, you know. Me, I was at a peak time in my life in terms of my advocacy, you know. I was really out there. And so having to come back to London, and I also had to figure out a new living situation because I knew that even though I loved my community, my sisters. There was no way that I could raise a kid there. So, sorry, I'm sipping my cup of tea. Hydrating is important, guys. So yeah, I had to find a new house for me while doing my advocacy, while being pregnant, while having no, like, while feeling isolated. And I did have some support, but I think that because no one really could understand what I was going through, and I was also still going through processing what had happened to me before I got pregnant on Lesbos Island, I didn't know that I needed to heal from it while having to kind of like understand that I was about to be a mother and get ready for it, you know? So yeah, I had to find a new living situation. And this is how I ended up in Brighton. I wanted to be by the sea because having been in Greece for almost 2 years with a break in between, I just grew to love living by the sea, and I just knew that having the sea by myself was an important element that I needed while I would need while being a mother and raising my kid. And it really made such a beautiful difference to live by the sea, because it really gave me and Afra that privilege of being close to nature. And the sea is very soothing for me. So even during my pregnancy, I kept on going to the sea. And when she was born, there was not much that I could do in terms of traveling. You know, I was still working from home. I went back to work when she was about 3 months. But we had the sea. We always had the sea. And so, yeah, she was born in Brighton. And even finding an accommodation in Brighton was not easy because, you know, I'm an activist, I'm a black activist, I'm a black woman, I'm single as well, and I was pregnant. I was not full-time, I didn't have a full-time job. So I think a lot of people got scared from renting their place to me, and, you know, agencies is always a bit tricky. You have to, like, meet certain criteria that I did not meet. So yes, it was tricky finding a flat, but I managed to find myself a small studio, and that's another story, because the owner of the studio was actually a racist, very racist. When Afra was born, one of the first things that I did was finding another flat, which is our flat now, and taking ourselves out of this situation. At some point, he was harassing me. He would come to my flat, knock on the door, disregard the fact that I had a baby. He was also flirting with me through my pregnancy towards the end. When I was fully pregnant, you know, he would call me and be like, oh yes, I am naked in my garden, things like this. And bear in mind, that is a held up person. I think that to some extent he felt very lonely, and he was expecting me to kind of like fill that hole, when obviously, you know, I had other priority and other things to do. But I went back to work when Afra was 3 months. It was really funny the way it happened. Obviously, my activism is something else. My activism is part of my daily life. So even when I'm not really actively advocating, I am still doing it. You know, I am still sharing on social media. I am still sending money to women, to single mothers, and to pregnant women, and to people from the black community seeking asylum in Europe every month through the Unheard, even though right now we have taking a bit of a break. But again, I'll record another episode on this. So this was still happening, but I wasn't, like, my activism, my journalism, which is my main tool of advocacy, I wasn't writing. I didn't have the energy and the time, you know. I just had a newborn baby, so I couldn't spend like hours on my computer writing, and I couldn't record my podcast neither. And yeah, I guess I needed a break from like my journalism to actually learn how to be a mother, to get to know my baby, and to, because I had just given birth. But 3 months after I given birth, because I was on benefits and I was not enough, and, you know, the UK is very expensive, I knew that I needed to seek for some, like, find a new income. And I wasn't really looking. It actually just came to me. I met a friend, Edina, who haven't been in touch with her for a while, but bless her. I hope that wherever she is, she's doing okay. But she's the one who helped me find that job. I met her and she was telling me about this organization that has been supporting refugees into finding work. Afra is playing with bottles. You might hear her in the background. So yes, so Edina told me about that organization supporting refugees into employment, and they had volunteer meetup, and I went there because I wanted to connect with people in Brighton who were also trying to support asylum seekers and refugees. And the meetup was surprisingly very, it was only white people. It was mainly white people. And I was really shocked. I was expecting to see perhaps more people of color, you know, more people coming from different community, different nationality, different ethnicity. But it was mostly white people. I guess because it was a volunteer meetup, and it's true that their volunteers were majoritarily white people. So I was a bit shocked. I was also a bit disappointed. And I went to one of the founder and I asked her, what are you doing in terms of like, you know, like racial equality? And what's your take on racism? You know, what are you doing as an organization to combat racism? And then she was like, oh, like actually, I need you, we need you. We need to continue this conversation. And this is how I got myself a job. I became the volunteer coordinator for an organization called, the Launchpad Collective, And the Launchpad Collective, the aim of the organization is really to support employees, to support refugees finding work, but also to support employees hiring refugees. I worked for them for about 9 months before I stopped to actually focus more on my journalism, which is my main tool of advocacy. And while working, so I went back to work when Afra was 3 months, you know, and it was only a part-time job. I only had a couple of hours per week. But I had to kind of like walk around, you know, raising her, being there for her. So I would work at night when she would be sleeping. I would do most of my work on my phone. I actually found it easier than I thought, but I didn't have the privilege of having a partner who would be here for us to support us. But it worked. I made it work. It was actually okay. And then when Afra became more, you know, when she wasn't always on me for her milk, when she was able to play by herself more, to occupy herself more, this is when I decided to go back to my activism, to full-time activism, which again, journalism is my main tool of advocacy. And I wouldn't say that it was not challenging. I had some challenges. It was challenging. But it was also, you know, people always tell me that I am a strong woman, and that I am a strong mother, and I am a strong woman, sorry. And even though I have to be strong with my daughter, I also want to be vulnerable. I want to allow myself to be vulnerable. I want to allow myself to also receive help the same way I am willing to help others. You know, I deserve the same help and support that I am willing to give to others. So I had to ask for help a couple of times. I couldn't really afford to have a babysitter, a childminder, but in Brighton, there is a woman of color group, and I went to one of their festival and I met with this amazing woman who decided to help me for a very cheap price. So she was coming every Friday. And then a time where I found myself needed more support, you know, I will reach out to this community. We have a group on Facebook. I will just ask people. I will say, yeah, I really need help. And so many people came through, you know. When we moved flats, I reached out in the room. I had seven amazing women who came, and they did everything, you know. They helped us move everything. They came with their car. And my new flat is on the fourth floor, and there is no lift. And they did it. They brought all my stuff up, you know. I went back and forth, but they did it for us. And that's why community is so important, because there is things that I couldn't have done on my own. You know, and when Afra was born, my brother came, my mother came, my friend came to pick me up from Brighton to take me in London, because I had a C-section to make sure I stayed there. And we did it, you know. I don't want to say I did it, because we did it. It was me and my community. You know how they say it takes a village to raise a kid? It really does. And now being in Africa, I really understand how, you know, African communities, African countries are much more community centered than European countries. And it has made motherhood so much more easier for me. And it has made it also more enjoyable for Afra as well. And I just want to say to all the single mothers out there that even though sometimes it might feel lonely, it might feel challenging, it might feel isolating, that we can do it. You know, me, I am an activist. I'm traveling the world with my baby. I am supporting my community. I am advocating and fighting for Black liberation while raising a daughter by myself. And I am doing it. And I have a community around me that is willing to be here for me, that is supporting me. And, you know, don't be scared to ask for help. Don't be scared to let people help you. Let people help you, because you deserve to be helped. You deserve people around you who are willing to support you, who are willing to keep, to look after your baby for 3 hours while you go sit somewhere by yourself and have time for yourself. While you treat yourself, while you practice self-care. But as much as self-care is important, community care is also essential. It's also important for our children to look after ourselves, as single parents, because our mood will impact them. It will have an influence on them and their development and their upbringing. So do yourself a favor, do them a favor, and look after yourself more. Anyways, that's it for today, guys. So again, this was a very personal episode, but I hope that you understand also the necessity of having this conversation, because, you know, for us single mothers, it can be very challenging. And we need more help than we are willing to ask for it. Wishing everyone a beautiful day. And yeah, thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. And don't forget to set your intention for the day. What do you intend for yourself for today? Me, I intend to rest. I intend to enjoy the weather, because although it's cold, it is sunny. And I intend to spend some quality time with my daughter. Afra. Afra. You want to say bye? You want to say bye? Uh-oh.